This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, and joining me from the depths, I think the depths of PJ, is Roshan Gunnison. It is now 6 a.m. in the morning, Thursday, the 1st of October, the start of the last quarter of the year. Where did 2020 go, other than being swallowed by COVID-19? That's the obvious one. But nonetheless, today is also another significant day because it's the Mid-Autumn Festival. And unfortunately, because of this rain and the clouds, we can't see the moon because otherwise it would be absolutely perfect. Roshan, have you had a chance to check out the moon last night?
No, but I'll take your word for it. Xiaoning, yesterday or so, I think you were talking about it and how it was. I saw yesterday, it was a very glorious looking moon in the sky.
Yeah.
It's actually quite sad that it's actually pretty dark out right now. From my point of view here in the depths of Petaling Jaya anyway.
Well, for those who are celebrating the Mid-Autumn Festival, I'm sure they're probably having some fancy dinner, you know, eat those mooncakes and play with those lanterns. I think it's a good time for anyone to spend some moments with their families. But what do we have ahead for us today, Roshan?
Well, today at around 6:30, which is where we take a look at international stories, we'll be talking about, well, Steve Mnuchin, who is the Treasury Secretary for the US, is promising one more serious try for a US stimulus deal. And then we've also got 5G crackdowns in Germany, where we'll see Huawei excluded from the 5G rollout. So these are the big international stories that we've been seeing throughout the few months, right? But also a bit closer to home, or about 10 minutes, we're going to be exploring financial independence, what it means to you, to me, and whether the FIRE movement is a realistic thing. We've got quite an interesting article there to cover.
Okay, and I'll be looking at, or at least we will be talking about Trump and what he says. Is it true? Is it fake? And who knows? And does it really matter? I mean, at the end of the day, as always, if you have anything to say, let us know, please. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We'll have more for you in just a few minutes. But first, there's this song by Tame Impala, Impatience. Don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was actually Patience by Tame Impala. Earlier on, I had a Freudian slip. I said Impatience, which is my character, I would have to say. Anyway, good morning. This is The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning with Roshan Gunnison. It's 6:07 in the morning, the 1st of October, a Thursday. But first up, actually, in terms of our stories, we have an interesting one. It's all about fire. And whether we should actually aspire to be full of fire. And this is something I think Roshan is probably the best person to talk about. Roshan, take it away, because this is your favorite topic.
Oh, it certainly is. I love talking about money. But I love talking to people about money. In particular, this article is actually from Mr. Stingy. And what I always enjoy from him is his ability to break down complex ideas into simple, readable and understandable topics, right? So right now he's talking about the FIRE movement, which is something that's gained a lot of steam over the last 10 years. I think particularly after the GFC of 2008, where people were worried about their retirement. And here, basically, the FIRE movement is retire, make as much money as you can to retire early, right? Financial independence, retire early. And now, while that may not be a situation that everyone wants to do, because some people may want to work forever, right? They enjoy the thrill of the chase and all of that jazz. There are a lot of lessons to be taken from it, like doing the math for retirement, which is essential. If you don't do the math for retirement, you don't know how much you need for retirement, which means you don't know how much you need to save. And so it's kind of like a chicken and egg situation that you're going through. But he breaks down some math very nicely here. So he says, like, if you, let's say you can live on 3,000 ringgit a year, what
month.
You need is
I don't think anyone can live on 3,000
a year.
Not in Kuala Lumpur anyway. And even 3,000 a month in KL, it can be challenging. I mean, especially if you have to pay rent, right? That would be almost impossible.
This is
impossible.
For like a single person at the very least, right? And it's like you are super basic in your needs for life. If you want like 5,000 a month, then you have to save up like 1.8 million by the time you retire, and assuming you get 3.5% per year inflation adjusted return. That sounds very complicated, but basically on a net basis, you're earning 3.5% on your money after above inflation, right? Which is something that it is realistic, but whether it's very important to have that cash buffer, right? That you make sure that you don't face another 2020. Like, don't forget, 2020's most important lesson is that things can go up in the air no matter how perfect you plan.
Yeah, I think this article, you're right, Roshan, is a very easy to read. It really breaks down the points about, you know, whether the fire, if you want to achieve that fire, what you need to do. And yeah. It poses some interesting questions. I think, like, even for me, even though I am somewhat familiar with investing, it's a different matter when it comes to your having that kind of very clear process in terms of saving or getting to your goal, right? Which is, mm-hmm. for some people, for fire. And I think for me, no fire. I'm one of those people, I think, will probably fall in the trap of always working, maybe not so hard, but still working. But I like what he says. The first point is, you know, what is financial independence? And we can't say it on air, but he basically says something like, you need enough money so that you don't have to care about it. And that's perfect. So even for people who want to continue working, for me, the goal is to get there where I still want to work because I like the work, but I'm not very worried whether, you know, this job is going to pay, whether I'm going to get sacked, whether there's going to be a retrenchment. I think that would be the ideal situation so that when you're working, it's somewhat driven by passion. Of course, getting a monthly paycheck helps also. But it's nice to have that balance. And that's what I aspire for at the end of the day. But he also brought up some very good points. And you're right. One of which is things can go wrong, right? And COVID-19 is exactly that thing that can go wrong for a lot of young people who never experienced the Asian financial crisis or the 2008 great financial crisis. So, you know, unfortunately for them, they're starting on their fire plan. And then before they know it, they've either got a pay cut or there's even worse, lost their job. So I think Mr. Stingy is like telling you, okay, don't panic. Get back on your feet again. And that's very important. I think for anyone who's trying to get reach their financial goals, have it listed, think about it. But if it doesn't work out because something goes wrong in the middle of it, it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, he talks about, it's that relatability, right? Like, he's coming from a certain level of experience himself, having made mistakes himself as well. And I think that's very important that, you know, when people look at a lot of these so-called quote-unquote financial gurus, right? It's like, oh, we are the picture of perfection when it comes to money and investing. No, everyone makes mistakes. Everyone screws up here and there. And we're not all great with our money. But end of the day, it comes down to making those steps and having those goals in mind, right? Yeah. And that's why I love this article so much, because it really helps to make it relatable and easy to understand what it means to what the concept of retirement means, right? Because it's something that everyone is bombarded with, oh, retirement, you need to save for retirement. But what does it mean? How much do you need? What kind of returns do you need? You know, these are the things that are so... we say it so often, but no one actually explains it.
Yeah, and I think his point is that fire is actually really tough. It's not easy and it's not for everyone. And it's also still not for Mr. Stingy because he wants that balance in life, right? So you too, maybe for some people that's your goal and for others it's not. But the point is to always have a financial plan, right, Roshan?
Of course, you should always have a financial plan. And actually, you should also check roommate.my and check out some of the articles that have been written there about working in the new norm during the MCO. Lots of good stuff there, relatable as well.
Yeah, so let us know what you think about the FIRE movement. Is it for you? Send in your messages over WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Now for some messages, stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, and that was Heroes by David Bowie. I can never forget his costumes and his platform shoes. I mean, they are really, really a classic. But anyway, you're listening to The Morning Run with Wong Xiaoning and Roshan. It is now 6:20 in the morning, 1st of October, a Thursday. And our next story is actually from Fast Company. And the title of it is Why Fact Checking. This is not FAT, by the way. This is FACT, Fact Checking Trump's Lies Won't Save Our Democracy. And this is very timely because, of course, the first presidential debate took place yesterday. I think some of us watched bits of it, you know, on YouTube. And let's just say it was, for me, it was a little bit sad, but it was a little bit sad that, you know, debates had descended to that level, but also a reflection of the times, right? So this article basically says that, you know, fact-checking is something that we probably need more than ever. And they cite some statistics. So one of which is that in 2014, there were only 44 fact-checking institutions. And today, There are 300 worldwide, and there are still many and this is because there are many coordinated efforts to spread fake news. And I think the classic one that a lot of us cite is the Russian interference in the 2016 US elections, where they planted, I guess, certain clickbait articles in different social media. So it's here to stay. But do you think really it makes a difference when, you know, people make up stuff on the internet? What do you think, Roshan?
See, this is the concern, right? Because to the base that Trump is looking to, he knows it doesn't matter. He knows that end of the day, whatever he says, they're just going to believe him. And it's the way he goes about it. Because he spent so much time discrediting everyone who ever tries to correct him, that anytime someone tries to correct him or fact-check him, it's a conspiracy. It's this is the cabal underneath the White House that's trying to disprove our savior here. You know, it's like Trump is the solution to all conspiracies, and anything that's said against him is a conspiracy in itself. That's the problem. Now, hopefully, the silver lining here is that, I mean, it was painful to watch the debate, right? I couldn't watch the whole thing, but hopefully, there are. I thought it wouldn't be possible for Trump to make mistakes in this debate, but it did look like he did here and there, right? In terms of he was overly aggressive to a painful point. And also, when a point blank, he had a very easy, in basketball terms, a layup, right? In terms of just discrediting white supremacists there and then. He didn't do that. He completely baffled it. He asked them to stand down and stand by. You're asking a white supremacist group to stand by? What are you telling them to stand by for, man? Like, what is the issue here? And then, I mean, he did make a statement to tell them to stand down. It makes you sound like you're commanding them, you know? So there is a lot going on here. It was very depressing. But at the same time, whether this galvanizes the independents and the people who haven't voted before, right, to stand in and vote. Voting is your right as a citizen, and you should exercise it irrespective of where you vote, right, or what side you are. But whether fact checkers are going to change how his base feels, I doubt it at this point.
Yeah, I think there were clearly some, I would say, falsehoods said during
many.
Said during the debate. But the point is, you know, okay, so now we know that all these fact-checking institutions exist. And I think, you know, they're probably going through the debate speech with like a fine-tooth comb and underlining everything that both sides had said, which is inaccurate. But I wonder whether we as, you know, whether we can actually participate in this. Because I think we are also very guilty sometimes of spreading that fake news. And we see that all the time, okay, because I'm sure we've had our fair share of, you know, sometimes unfortunately forwarding that WhatsApp that truly doesn't, that's not, that we should have actually stopped to think about for a moment before we forwarded it, and we don't, and then we are responsible for spreading that fake news. So, you know, unfortunately, whether it's something political or I think with regards to COVID-19 or trying to scare some people that there's a virus cluster here or there, I think we have to also play that little role. So it's not just technology companies, it's not only fact checkers, it's not the politicians themselves, but I think also like the little bit that we can do. Don't you think so, Roshan?
Yeah, because we are the front line, right? Essentially, we are the ones who are spreading the information. Now, I tell this to my family all the time, and especially some relatives. If you don't know, don't share. It doesn't matter if you're not sure, you check it first. If you cannot verify that information, don't share it, because you're putting more people in danger if you're sharing a false information or even misinformation. Things from whether it's COVID-19 or scams or news, right? Because it things that align themselves with greed or fear spread very fast, right? If you send something like, oh, this stock is the one to buy today, then you will see that spread very fast. Yeah. And the same thing, if you hit someone's fear, that news will also spread very fast, right? That's how people get scammed.
Yeah, that's very true. So I think the point to take away is that it's impossible to be sure that everything you read online, on your phone, even sometimes in the newspapers, is 100% accurate. Always verify, always confirm, read as many sources as you can. And if you're not sure, don't spread it on. But I think the point is, Is it going to save democracy? I'm not so sure. I think, like you say, most of us have already made up our minds in terms of what we want to vote on or what we believe or what we choose on. And I think that's pretty much the case also for the Americans. So let us know what you think about our conversation earlier on the FIRE movement, or whether you think there should be more fact-checking. WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We will read some of that after. But up next, we have the news bulletin. And to take us here is I Melt With You by Modern English. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Good morning, I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Morning Run together with Roshan Kunnison. And that was The Moneymaker by Rilo Kiley. Obviously, I need to find one too. It is now 6:39 in the morning, 1st of October, Thursday. Now, we've had some interesting conversations about the FIRE movement and whether, you know, you really want to be sure about what you send out in your social media and your WhatsApp. You know, make sure that it's not fake news. But now we're having a look at what's happening around the world. Because first up is, of course, the US. And there has been a lot of talk about the US stimulus plans because that actually expired, if I'm not wrong, last month. And it's been a back and forth with all the lawmakers in the US, and it hasn't helped the economy. As a result, the stock market for the month of September ended on a negative note. Even NASDAQ is down 5%. But in comments to CNBC yesterday, US Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin signaled that the White House is prepared to boost its offer for a new fiscal stimulus package in a last-ditch attempt to strike a compromise with the congressional Democrats. Now, this new proposal is expected to be around $1.5 trillion, which is still far falls short of the Democrats' latest proposal, but is at least triple the amount that the Republicans tried to pass in the Senate last month.
Yeah, so the Democrats have been calling for a $2.2 trillion package in new spending on new direct payments to U.S. households, emergency unemployment benefits, and federal aid to businesses and local governments. So getting closer to that $2.2 trillion with this $1.5, and it really seems like this is going to be that one more serious try from the U.S., from the Treasury Secretary. And many economists and the Federal Reserve officials have warned that the U.S. recovery from the shock of the pandemic is likely to be weaker and slower without a relief, a new relief package. I think this is something Jerome Powell echoed last week. And raising the chances of widespread bankruptcies, dwindling job growth, and long-term damage to the labor market if the government doesn't come in to prop up the economy a little longer, right? And especially because the cases in the US haven't been slowing down. Okay, maybe they've been slowing down, but it's still quite a serious situation there in terms of infection and the spread rate in the US.
Yeah, I think what everybody's going to be watching today or later today in the US is actually the initial jobless claims numbers, right? Because they're coming out tonight in US time, 8:30. Now, if we look at the period in September 26, which is the last data, it was relatively flat, actually, which is not a good sign, which means that there is no real recovery in the US economy. So I think, you know, it's going to force the lawmakers to probably come together and make a decision. But the problem is, if no deal is reached by this week, hopes of a compromise will probably be postponed until at least after the November elections and possibly until the next Congress is formed in January, which to me means what's going to happen to the US economy for a good 3 months. And if you don't have the stimulus in place, won't the economy suffer greatly? Won't unemployment numbers continue to rise? And I don't know, if I'm the president of the United States at the moment, I would definitely want this stimulus to go through. Maybe that's why Trump is pushing for it. But apparently one of the biggest sticking points is in the negotiations is the insistence by the Democrats on a big round of federal assistance to municipal and state authorities. Now, Democrats want some $400 billion to be allocated to state and local governments who are struggling as a source of revenues dry up in the pandemic. And the White House and congressional Republicans have been resisting funding on that scale.
Yeah, so if no compromise is reached, Democrats in the House are expected to move ahead with a vote on their own plan so that lawmakers can campaign for re-election, saying that they at least tried to find a solution here. And late last month, Republicans who control the Senate introduced legislation for a stimulus package worth $500 billion to help their own campaigns, but this failed to pass a procedural vote in the upper chamber. So right now, basically everyone needs to go into the election saying, hey, we tried, you know, we tried to pass it, but the other side didn't want to pass our bill. That's what everyone's going to be playing, a blame game come
I'm sorry, but that's a fat load of good, right, for the American people. You know, exactly, actually giving them solutions.
Yeah, 3 months of no indecision. So, you know, if this is going to be an election campaign promise, I don't know how much good that's going to do. You're not going to have Congress until January to pass this bill. 3 months and the holiday months of the year, right, which is where spending is supposed to boom. But how are people going to spend if there's no money to spend?
Exactly. So actually, you know, sometimes when you look at this, a little bit of kudos to our Malaysian lawmakers. We managed to pass our stimulus packages in Parliament. I think there was, of course, some issues about whether there was enough transparency, whether it should have been debated earlier. But at the end of the day, the stimulus packages were passed. It was somewhat of a bipartisan approach in terms of helping Malaysians. And I think that's what really counts in these difficult times, right? Because there's no point you being in one corner of the room and your enemy in another corner in the room and the people are suffering right in the middle. So let us know. Anyway, let us know what you think. You know, you can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, we'll be taking a look at the front pages of our daily newspapers and online portals. We'll be back after these messages. Now, don't go away. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. Good morning. I'm Wong Shao Ning with Roshan Kunnison, and this is The Morning Run. And that song was Closer to Fine by Indigo Girls. It is now 6:50 in the morning, and we are taking a look at the newspapers this morning. So in my hands is the New Straits Times, and I'm actually looking at the business section because there's a bit of an interesting, I would say, tiff going on between Bank Negara and MyCC. They are at loggerheads, and that's the title of the article. So the central bank regrets commission's move in ruling out Piam, and it's Piam and FAWOAM agreement. Yes, that's a lot of alphabets. But but basically, Bank Negara and the Malaysian Competition Commission are on a collision course over the latest decision against Persatuan Insurance Arm Malaysia, or basically all the general insurers and their 22 members. Now, the central bank has expressed regret over MyCC's decision to rule out an agreement between Piam and the Federation of Automobile Workshop Owners Associations of Malaysia on discounted rates for motor parts prices and labour rates for repairs of motor vehicles. Now, this whole kerfuffle started, I think, at least 3 years ago. But MyCC, in its final decision on September 14, found that Piam and its 22 members had infringed Section 4 of the Competition Act by introducing the Piam-approved repairer scheme. Now, Bank Negara said they regret MyCC's decision because it was actually put into place to actually improve the situation of consumers who had in the past had to wait many days for an outcome in terms of getting their cars repaired. Now, I think this is a rather interesting article because very seldom do we see regulators and government agencies having a bit of a public spat. But I wonder whether this is the end of the matter or whether there will be a change in outcome. What do you have in your papers, Roshan?
Oh, yeah. This is definitely the front page of the CEO Morning Brief as well, right? And it's very interesting because it's taking the view of the, I guess, for businesses who are not in, the anti-competitive nature of this is whether you're in the group or not, right? That's where it comes from. As opposed to, from a US point of view, anti-competition is if it impacts the consumer. So this is going to be very interesting to watch going forward. I've actually got some interesting stuff on the Malay Mail, right? So a couple of headlines from our former Prime Minister twice, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad, it's a lot of UMNO-centric headlines here. One being Dr. M says no forgiveness ever for Najib for destroying his UMNO. And then you've also got Dr. Mahathir, UMNO breaking into factions under Zahid's leadership, Dato Sri Zahid Hamidi's leadership. And I think this is something that we've been seeing over the last few months, particularly after UMNO. This is actually something we've been seeing for the last 2 years, right? But for more often than not, it's been able to keep itself together. But in this new Perikatan National, Muafakat National, whatever you want to call government, how UMNO itself seems to be, the narrative isn't as straightforward as it used to be, and maybe it's weakened ever since the verdict on the Najib case for SRC International.
Yeah, but look how well they did in Sabah. So, you know, I don't but think... They, yeah.
Yeah, but they didn't get the chief minister position, which is something that is also very interesting, right? They won the most number of state seats yet, the power of the Prime Minister's office shown right through all of that, where Bersatu took the Sabah CM's post. So it's very interesting to see how they're all playing this coalition of politics. Everyone was talking about how within Pakatan Harapan, you know, people were, there was infighting. There's a lot of infighting going on here as well.
Yeah, for sure. And staying on the topic of Sabah, the Star has an article on page 3 where Mata is telling people defer Sabah holiday plans because they don't. They're saying that they're seeing a spike in cases, and I mean this is a fact. After all, there are 4 districts in Sabah: Lahad, Datu, Tawau, Kuna, and Semporna, that have been placed under a targeted enhanced movement control order from September 29 to October 12. Now, my point about this is that yes, it probably is does make good common sense. But unfortunately for Sabah, it is already an economy that is somewhat dependent on tourism. So now you have, you don't even have locals to rely on. So really, what will the impact be on the state's GDP, I wonder? It's going to be rather tough times ahead for them. And I think that is the first task that the Chief Minister Hajiji has said that is his priority. And I think, yeah, he really, really probably needs to have a tough look at what they can do for the Sabahans at this moment. And Roshan, what else do you have?
So very quickly on Bloomberg, US blocks palm oil imports from one of the top producers. And this top producer is Malaysia's FGV Holdings. And, you know, we were talking about Sabah yesterday, 25%. Sabah provides 25% or about that of our palm oil production, right? And essentially, this is coming in from U.S. Customs and Border Protection, who have basically cited a one-year investigation that relates to forced labor, amongst other things. So this is a big deal. FGV is a top producer and in this country as well. And how this plays out is going to be interesting. I wonder whether they will respond to it as well as Top Glove did a few months ago when U.S. Customs and Border Protection also investigated them.
Yeah, I think we'll be talking about this later on at 9:15, but it will be a story we are closely for watching. But that's all from the papers we have this morning. Coming up next is the 7 a.m. news bulletin, followed by more business news and analysis, where we'll be speaking to Tony Nash, CEO of Complete Intelligence, to find out where global markets are heading. But first, here's this song by my favorite band, The Beatles, Drive My Car. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.